Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lakine. We've heard a lot recently about people who are questioning the safety and effectiveness of vaccinations. Some parents concerned about their children being injured by vaccinations and the chemicals in them are refusing to have their children vaccinated. They're being criticized in the mainstream media for not protecting their children from diseases that are preventable. And in fact, there have been some outbreaks of measles which had been almost beaten back. How dangerous are vaccinations? Are parents right to be worried? Are pharmaceutical companies pushing vaccinations to make more money, or do we really need them? Does the state have the power to force people to have vaccinations they don't want for themselves or their families, and should they? How can we get reliable information? Here to help us understand what's happening is our guest, James S. Turner, a partner in the D.C. law firm of Swanken & Turner, founded in 1973. Jim represents businesses, individuals, and consumer groups in a wide variety of food, drug, health, environmental, and product safety regulatory matters. He was one of the first lawyers working with Ralph Nader and wrote The Chemical Feast, the Nader Report on Food Protection at the Food and Drug Administration. Jim is board chair of Citizens for Health, advocating for consumer rights to natural healing, and Voice for Hope, Healers of Planet Earth, which informs legislators and regulators about the importance of consumer access to natural healing. He served as special counsel to the Senate Select Committee on Food, Nutrition, and Health. He was the lead attorney on a successful petition to the FDA to reclassify acupuncture needles, permitting their legal importation and sale in the United States. Jim Turner, welcome back to All Together Now.
Thanks, Eleanor. I really appreciate being here.
Great. So I want to dig into this with you, and I know I should say you're a friend and neighbor and a colleague for many years, and we recently had a conversation that I found very fascinating about this issue of vaccinations. Some parents are worried about the safety of vaccinations. How safe do you think vaccines are?
I think that that question is inside the context of several major points. First of all, every individual has their own biochemical individuality. So the answer, how safe are vaccines, is an issue that has to be answered in regard to the individuals to whom they are being offered. How safe is a vaccine or any vaccine or all vaccines for any particular individual? Now, the second context point is that we know that vaccines do have dangerous aspects to them, and we know that by the fact that the federal government has paid a little over $4 billion to families whose children have been either died from or seriously harmed by vaccines. There's a formula. It's in the law. If you receive a vaccine and then within a certain period of time certain symptoms appear, it's presumed by the government that the vaccines were the cause, and then you are compensated. And that, several thousand families and $4 billion worth of compensation. So there can be really no serious discussion about the fact that vaccines do harm some people. They do harm some children and people. Adults get harmed as well.
Mm-hmm.
So beginning with that, we know there's a problem. And then I think the next question is, well, what kind of a problem is it? And I would say that there's little doubt that as a program, the national recommendation to the states that a series of vaccines be made mandatory with no opt-outs except, to some extent, some medical opt-outs, that program is essentially a dangerous program. It's a lottery program because we know, the government knows, science knows, medicine knows, everyone knows that some of those children are going to be killed and some are going to be maimed. That's a known fact. Now, one of the arguments that comes from the people who are arguing for vaccines is that the number of children who are harmed is so minuscule that the loss of those children justifies the fact that all these other children are provided with massive amounts of safety, and we prevent viral carried diseases. So then we need to look carefully. Okay, so first of all, I don't believe that that's a sound argument at all. I think that it's a morally corrupt society that says you must take our product knowing that some of you will be either killed or seriously injured. But my argument is that we should have choice, and then the weighing of the benefits and the risks of the vaccines is in the hands of the individual, and the individuals can make decisions for themselves. And in that framework, you end up in a situation where, as we believe in our democracy, that what the workings of individual decision-making, and then with full information and careful study and learning and knowledge and so forth, the result that comes from that is the best result. That's what democracy is. That's what we believe. We call it elections and public opinion and so forth in politics. We call it the market in economics. In these health issues, and it's across the board on health issues, I call it choice, the right to choose. They have the right to choose whether or not to be vaccinated. Now, once you get to that level, then you need to ask a whole range of questions. First of all, in the area of biochemical individuality, the idea that each person is different, you need to know what kind of product are you being subjected to. So California has a mandatory vaccination law, which only allows medical exemptions, and the very, very severe pressure is put on doctors who actually grant exemptions. It's a very, very pronounced state policy encouraged by the federal CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, CDCP, actually. That group promotes very, very vigorously that all these vaccines, 10 of them, be mandatory across the country, and states are adopting that as laws. But the fact is that individuals react differently to vaccines. And so the notion that all kids in the first grade and all kids in the seventh grade will receive the same 10 shots or the same array of shots immediately does not allow for the difference in the way people uptake vaccines. So, for example, there's the so-called MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, and rubella. That's given as one vaccine. Some very strong advocates for those individual vaccines also argue that there are people for whom taking them separately would be safer. And it might well be that some people would want to take them individually. And if they take them individually, it does not in any way interfere with their effectiveness to the extent that they are effective. The same thing is true for the DPT, the diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus. There's no particular violation of efficacy if you take those separately. Now, on the DPT, it's interesting that the P in the DPT has been, the pertussis has been a source of enormous controversy all the way from 1935 to the present. And they've been back and forth about what kind of pertussis vaccine they have, how it should be dealt with, how we should do it. And there's a book called Shot in the Dark, which was written about, I think, around 1980, 81, something like that, by Barbara Lowe Fisher and Harry Coulter. And that book laid out by story after story of children who had been maimed or died from the P part of the pertussis vaccine. And so that's been dealt with in various ways, including in the late 90s, a new form was used. But now, just recently, currently, there are studies suggesting that the current form of the P in the DPT actually spreads pertussis rather than protects against it. Now, the point here is not to argue out whether that whether we can prove one way or the other, whether that's true or not. The point here is to say that when these kinds of debates are underway, that's the second context for which we have a parent creating the having the opportunity to choose. They might say, well, I'll take the diphtheria and the tetanus, but I think I'm going to wait on the pertussis because of this information that we have, or perhaps get one of the other kind of pertussis rather than the one that's in the mass-produced vaccine. When we vaccinated our children back in the late 1970s, early 1980s, we actually found a pediatrician who would find that the vaccines in very, very specific forms that were made in very specific ways that were, in his opinion, in our research, much safer than the vaccines that were in the mass market. All I'm saying is that the right to choose is more than just saying yes or no to a particular vaccine. It is also the right to choose the timing and choose the form, and then to maybe take 9 of the 10 vaccines, saying, let's wait on pertussis. So that's the issue on how safety works, and there's a lot more to say on this. I mean, the notion that that you find in the mass media that there's no question here, and it's all solved, and it's all fine, It's just a misstatement of what's actually going on in reality. And what happens is parents who are diligent parents begin to look into things, and they see a debate going on. People go around saying the polio vaccine was great. It really helped us with polio. But hardly anybody in the public understands that there was a huge debate about the Sabin polio vaccine versus the Salk polio vaccine. Huge debate. And parents would really like to know about the choice because there were some very particular choices that were made. The argument about polio vaccine versus not polio vaccine covers up that entire argument, the whole thing that went on between Salk and Sabin. The same is true of most of the vaccines that are out there. There are various ways of looking at them and how they work and so forth. So that's a pretty long answer to a very direct question, but why don't I stop there and see if you've got some more things you want to ask about?
Yeah, that's really great. Such a thoughtful response on it. But I want to circle back to what you said right at the beginning of your answer, where you said that there actually has been $4 billion paid out to people harmed by vaccines. I had never heard that, and I don't know anybody that's ever mentioned that. How is that fact unknown? I mean, clearly there's injury, possibly death from people as a direct result of some of these vaccines. Where does that figure come from, and how come we don't know about that?
Well, first of all, anyone can Google the vaccine compensation program, and they can read the reports of the Justice Department and what is approved. And there's an entire system of what are colloquially called vaccine courts that listen to these cases. And there's a group of lawyers that that represent clients before those courts. When the system was created, we took 4 cases. We do this on all kinds of issues that we get involved in. A new program is created, like the vaccine compensation program, and we took 4 cases to see how the program worked. And from an operational point of view, it doesn't work very well. Although one of our 4 harmed children did get a $250,000 payment, and that is an example of how this works. And we got into it and looked into it. And then if you want to know the collected numbers, you can just Google a vaccine compensation program. You can read about it, and you can you can examine it, and you can see the numbers. Now, we don't know about it because the media, for whatever reasons, isn't reporting on it, and should be reporting on it. Mm-hmm. And there have been some people who have reported on it, and then their presence on the in the reporting circle has been diminished or eliminated. And I don't, that's just one of those things. But I will go back and tell you what the argument that's made excusing these payments. The argument that's made is that the payment of this $4 billion is not proof of a cause and effect between the vaccine and the individual harmed, because it's essentially a legislative judgment that says if these symptoms occur within this time after this particular vaccine, we will presume that the vaccine was the agent of causing the harm, and then the money's paid out. And that's the way many compensation programs are done. Agent Orange, for example, if you were in a certain area where Agent Orange was sprayed during the Vietnam War, you get paid. And you get that payment because the legislature presumed that there was a connection between the spraying and the agent and the injury. There's science that supports that. There's epidemiology. There's science that supports the connection between the giving of a vaccination and then the symptoms that occur. There is a lot of debate that goes on about whether the chart is too narrow or too broad. People who are critical of the science that limits the amount of money that's paid out say that the time, it's like 48 hours if these symptoms occur. They're saying the time frame is too small. But the social consensus through our political process and our government process and our scientific research and so forth, the social consensus is that enough children have been seriously harmed and some have died in circumstances that the government has judged requires payment of compensation. And it's about $4 billion, a little over $4 billion at this point. And you might want to, you know, just anybody wants to, they can just go Google, as I say, the vaccine compensation program. And that's a federal program. It's part of the CDC structure. The CDC has no responsibility for giving vaccinations. They make recommendations to the state, and then they lobby heavily. They lobby the states to adopt those recommendations. Generally speaking, the states don't do any independent scientific research. They just decide whether to accept or not accept the CDC recommendations, and now essentially all states have accepted them. And then California, much more vigorously than any other state, has blocked what's called the religious exemption or the philosophical exemption, the idea that a person can say for philosophical or religious reasons, I choose not to be vaccinated, state of California has abolished that. Forty-seven other states have some form of opt-out that is more than just a medical opt-out, and then two states through legal process are still working on what they're going to say. So California is right at the cutting edge. And unless California's law is challenged by the legislature or in the courts, you know, a few years from now, that will be the law across the country, and everybody will have to, all kids will have to receive those 10 shots.
Yeah, it feels like the noose is tightening on this. I mean, it feels to me, and you're much more on top of this on a daily basis than I am, but there's always been some concern about some vaccines and some push to have it. But I've noticed even in the past year a really big push in the media to claim that vaccines are safe. Anyone who questions vaccines are anti-scientific. They're crazy. They're off in some little dark hole in the internet getting misinformation. They're putting their children at risk because of misinformation. And even in the Washington Post this past year, like article after article, kind of attacking anyone who questions vaccine. Are you seeing that? Is there like a bigger push now to make people use these vaccines and to label anyone who raises questions as an anti-science nut?
Yes, there is absolutely a vigorous campaign, and it's very, very... It's well outside the realm of pure scientific or legal exploration. So pretty much all of the social media platforms are blocking any discussion of vaccines. Now, you can get into that. You can find vaccines on some of them, but generally speaking, people posting statements about vaccines are finding their stuff being blocked. Just this yesterday, one of the school systems in California released all the medical records of the students who had vaccine exemptions from their doctors. California still has a medical exemption, but they're putting a lot of pressure on parents and trying to stop them. And they redacted the names of the students, but they did release all of the records. And in fact, with those records, it's pretty possible to find out who the doctor is, who the person is that's gotten the exemption, and so forth. So that that now is starting to chill people being able to talk about vaccines. In addition, there's just a continuous drumbeat that anybody who raises any question about safety and efficacy of vaccines is somehow a pariah that should be stopped. Now, the interesting issue there is that the kinds of questions that are among those being blocked are a question that says why in each of the so-called measles outbreaks, why was a significant portion, maybe 30 to 50% of the group that got measles, children who had been vaccinated? Why is that? If you say that issue, you raise that question, that goes into the category of vaccine denier, vaccine pariah, scientifically unsound, and so forth. But when you have a situation where a group of children are having a measles outbreak and a significant number of them are known to have been vaccinated, we don't know for sure that the others weren't, but we do know for sure that a significant of them were vaccinated, and you raise that as a question and you get called unscientific and a pariah and just a troublemaker, that's kind of bizarre. That's one of the kinds of issues. Another issue that's fascinating to me, really fascinating, is somebody stands up and says, I think that the MMR vaccine should be split into three vaccines taken separately rather than all together. And they're identified in the media, by the mainstream media, as vaccine deniers. I mean, mm-hmm. It's quite extraordinary. I don't know exactly what's happening, but when you look at the media in general, there is a tendency for a story to get going in some way, and then media looks at other media to see what the other media said, and they feel comfortable if they're within sort of a comfortable range of what's being said. Now, I will also point out that this big drumbeat on mandatory vaccination and getting everybody to get on board and attacking anybody who was critical began to be played out in the media shortly after some major billion-dollar pharmaceutical products were taken off the market by the FDA, and they caused some pretty significant financial harm to the pharmaceutical industry. I don't know whether that was the motivation for this happening, but you've got a huge machine there that's pushing stuff out, and all of a sudden, one or two of the main things it pushes out are no longer available to be pushed out. They very well may turn and try to push something else out, and so all of a sudden, the huge PR machine that was putting out $150 billion drug that's no longer on the market has to do something, and it may well be that gets turned into pushing out things around vaccines, which are very, very profitable products for the drug industry.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know, when we were growing up, you felt like the doctors were honest, they were interested in taking care of you, the drugs that were used were, as good as we could get. They thought they were useful, even there may have been issues with them, but not that were known and pushed knowingly. But we're in an age and stage now in our country where so much of what happens is kind of, it's being pushed by corporations for profit, and then, health be damned of the consumer. I'm thinking in particular of what's been going on the past several years with the opioid crisis, and now we find out it's one family, the Sackler family, which was pushing the opioids just to push their own profits up. I mean, how many tens of millions of dollars does someone have, and how could you have a lack of a moral conscience to be pushing a product that you know is addictive and even deadly? So I'm kind of wondering, who are the companies behind these vaccines, and are they trustworthy?
Well, before I get into that answer, let me go back and mention that the Sackler family, basically I think four brothers, started moving pharmaceuticals into the American society back in the late 40s. They controlled advertising in the drug area, and they were identified in what was then the major scandal at FDA when using their advertising approach. They were able to create a business, a company, which produced scientific papers. And what they would do is get the chief regulator of antibiotics at the FDA to make speeches at conventions that they would pay for. They would give a stipend for, and then the speeches would be printed printed for the program, and then they would be sold to the pharmaceutical industry, and the speeches would be speeches by the chief regulator of the FDA's antibiotic drug division that said how good the Sackler antibiotic drugs were. They didn't say the Sackler drugs. They gave the name of the drug. Mm-hmm. These were not opioids at that point. That was the biggest scandal in FDA history up to 1960. I wrote about it a little bit in the Chemical Feast when I did the NADA report on food protection at the FDA. But the Saturday Review of Literature, which was a very important magazine in the after post-World War up until about 1980 maybe, they ran a whole expose on the Sackler family, what they were doing, how they were doing it, and we talked to them about it. So the Sacklers' involvement in the manipulation of the FDA has been available for the media to look into at any time over the last 40 years. It was well known that they were working very, very hard to get heroin derivatives into the drug supply. And the difficulty is that the argument that they were making is not an easy one to refute. They were saying that for intractable pain, these products that they had were very useful, and they shouldn't be withheld from the public. And my own personal inclination would be to say, yeah, that's probably true. We weren't involved in this issue, so we didn't have to take a position. But when we run across a product that looks like it's good but might have serious side effects, what we're asking for is that it be seriously managed in the way that it's put into the market. That we don't just say yes, no, no, you can't, yes, you can. That's pretty much the way the FDA tends to regulate, is yes, you can, or no, you can't. They don't actually have a very subtle control panel to keep things usable in a narrow way and under heavy control. By the way, my feeling is that that's the biggest problem we have with vaccines. It's a yes-no switch. And yes-no just isn't the answer on the vaccine question. Now, let me go back. Merck is a very important producer of vaccines now. Welcome is, Letterly is. These are important companies. They're big drug companies. They produce these vaccines. They've been a part of their line of production for years. They've been relatively small producers financially until the last 10 years or so. Which, as the pharmaceuticals have gotten under more and more pressure, they've taken up a larger and larger portion of the income to the companies, and it's very important. I mean, it's hard to understand that the corporate mentality is so tied to the finances. It's crucial to the whole country. I mean, If you cut back on the amount of drugs that are used in the society, that is the amount of pharmaceuticals, the GDP goes down, the gross national product goes down. If you want to understand this, there was a big case in the auto safety area back in the late 1900s when one of the car companies had a car that would catch fire and about 200 people were killed, and it was learned that when they calculated it out, the cost of compensating the families for the people who died was less than the cost of getting rid of the fire hazard. And so on the spreadsheet, that's the way it came out, and that's what happened until the hue and cry got going and the public said, you can't do that. Well, right now, it is being calculated by the government and the corporations and the healthcare world that a few hundred deaths or disabilities and $4 billion worth of money paid by the government is a small cost for what they claim to be the full protection that you get from the vaccines. Now, the argument I make is we should look at that very carefully. I personally don't think any death is worth any of what we have going on in the vaccine world. But I have to point out very carefully that in California, where this most draconian law is being pushed, the vaccine level statewide was not just slightly lower than 95% of all the children were vaccinated. So they were using the mandatory law to get they're saying 95 to 96% is required to get what they call herd immunity. So they're using this really draconian law and paying these compensations out to the dying children to move vaccination rates from up 1 to 2%. Now, on the other side, there's no evidence that that 1 to 2% in any way cut into the herd immunity, which they call herd immunity. There's a big debate about whether that actually exists. But just set that aside. Then there's an argument about each one of the vaccines and how the immune process works. By the way, all this discussion that I'm having right now is all being blocked by the argument anybody who raises these kinds of questions is obviously a quack, anti-science, undermining reality, and so forth. And it's closing off that debate, which is going to increase the number of children that are hurt, I suspect, because there's not going to be the scrutiny that should be there. And there's huge discussions. For example, when you get chickenpox naturally, you're much less likely to get at least this is what some science says. You're less likely to get chickenpox when you get older than when you get it when you stop your chickenpox with the vaccine. In other words, chickenpox as a child is not all that terribly debilitating. And it creates a natural immunity, which is lifelong. When you take the chickenpox vaccine, the varicella vaccine, it blocks the natural immunity, and then later on in life, you might start having reactions to the vaccine. Now, nobody that we can find has looked at the question, is the debilitating disease that comes in adults because they've got the varicella vaccine, a varicella virus, coming more in people who are vaccinated or in more for people who aren't vaccinated? Shingles. There's a whole big ad now to sell a shingles vaccine. There's no serious study to tell us whether or not the shingles vaccine occurs more, the shingles disease occurs more in people vaccinated with chickenpox than those not vaccinated, because those not vaccinated, the argument goes, scientifically, have lifelong immunity and don't get the shingles. Now, they'll come forward with a bunch of expert scientists saying, no, that's not true. And then there are other experts on the other side saying, yes, it is true. My point is a very simple point. You've got a debate going on here. The public ought to know about it. And then we ought to have an opportunity for people to choose. And these choices do not put the community at risk. Now, if we do have a situation where the community is put at risk and a finding can be made on that, then the state might well be able to step in and say, we have a serious situation, we have a threatening epidemic, we have a tool that can stop it, let's mandate the vaccine or mandate quarantines or mandate a whole bunch of stuff. That's a possibility. But to argue that there may be a situation in which one vaccine might be required by law that one vaccine be taken is justification for validating the mandating the use of all vaccines on a schedule that is very tight, that actually ignores completely the individual immune systems of the people being vaccinated, is a misstatement of public policy. It's a misuse of public policy. And the way they solve that problem, because we know it's a misuse in part because we have people dying as a result of it, and the way that the society decides to solve that problem is, well, we'll just pay them some money. And as I say, it's up to $4 billion. That system is what's at fault. That system. And so for somebody to say vaccines, you can't argue whether vaccines are safe or not safe. That if you put that argument in play, then you are somehow a quack and a jerk and a stupid person and so forth. Mm-hmm. That argument misses the point that there's an entire system operating here. That system has created side effects that have caused people to die and be maimed, and that system has said the way we'll handle that, because it's so small, not very important, I will tell you, Nobel Prize-winning virologist who really believes in vaccines spoke to me about this issue and called those children wastage. There's wastage in all systems. That,
oh my God,
the idea of having that debate being covered up by the argument everybody is a quack if they're on the side of raising questions is just we see it happening in other areas, and it's a huge big debate. This public needs to be aware that every one of these systems is built around a set of values, which is they're important values. They need to be used, and we need to have a strong economy. We need to sell stuff. We need to make money, but we have to have it be scrutinized. And what we're getting in the vaccine situation that's not being allowed to be discussed is analogous to what we have to the two Boeing planes that crashed. There is a way that the corporate money-making system evaluates risks and benefits. And the core point that I made in the chemical feast and have been making in the last 50 years or so of fighting these battles is that the biggest place we make a serious error is that we balance health risks against economic benefits. In the flu, for example, there are risks and benefits that are laid out about the flu. On the benefit side of the flu, the way the risk and benefits go is if you get the flu, you're going to miss 4 or 5 days of work. 4 or 5 days of work adds up to X millions of dollars. Therefore, if we give people vaccines, they won't miss work or school, and those millions of dollars won't be lost to the economy. The idea of taking the flu benefits against the flu health risks, the flu health benefits against the flu health risks, comes up with a quite different equation. Now, it might well be that you would end up saying you still might, as an individual, might want to get a flu shot. That's possible. But if you take 4 days off from work or from school and you get well, we had a public health officer who strongly opposed the flu vaccine back in the 70s. He said, look, that influenza is nature's way of telling you to slow down. Now, yes, it can get very serious. It can be a problem. There are certainly instances where you want to take an important flu remedy and you give a drug, and it may well be that you want to, if you believe that the flu is going to stop you from getting a flu shot, is going to stop you from getting the flu, you may want to say take that. But to mandate it for the entire population or to beat the drums and say come and get your flu shot without making clear that there is a trade-off going on here between what the risk is versus what the benefit is, and the benefit is primarily a financial benefit, to not make that trade-off clear is the wrong way to go about having a sound vaccine policy.
Right. Well, I'm so glad you mentioned the flu vaccine, because I haven't taken the flu vaccine, and this year in particular, one thing is I know last year they were saying, oh, well, the vaccine we had was not that effective, but then we heard this winter the vaccine was much more effective and everybody should really take it. And every time I went into the Kaiser for whatever, an eye exam or whatever issue, I was there, the doctors, the nurse, every person I talked to would say, do you want your flu shot now? You want your flu shot now? They had the stands in the lobby. You had to walk in and out by them. You want your flu shot now? And I was like, oh, my God, this is like a big drug pusher. It was so intense. I was like, even if I wanted one, I probably wouldn't have one. I thought, who is behind this? And then I just was reading recently in the Washington Post the story about the flu this year, the numbers of people, it's down from last year, but we're not out of the flu season yet. And they had a figure in there going, yeah, the flu vaccine this year was much more effective than last year. But then you look at the data, it said something like they thought there was, like, if you took the flu shot, you'd have an 8% less of a chance of getting the flu. I'm like, oh, my God, like, what kind of data are these people using that they're pushing the flu vaccine, and how much of it is connected to really wanting to keep people healthy, and how much is it connected to the corporations wanting their profits healthy?
Well, see, my point and the point that we make at Citizens for Health is that question is a reasonable question to be discussed. It's reasonable to be on the social media. It's reasonable to be in the newspapers. It's reasonable to have people go on the radio and talk about it. But the CDC and the people who push the vaccines, the drugstores, the newspapers, and so forth, all say it is not reasonable to have that discussion. We're saying it's reasonable to have that discussion so that individuals can make the choice not to take these vaccines. They're saying it's not reasonable to avoid these vaccines. And they're using every piece of legal maneuvering to make it harder and harder to avoid taking those shots if you want to avoid it. Now, when you start looking at all of this, you say, what are the mechanisms that allows this kind of suppression of information to happen? Well, when the federal law was passed that created the vaccine compensation system and created the framework for telling what vaccines are going to be mandated and so on, that is when I say they're mandated, the recommendations, there was also a section of that law that very specifically said every single individual who takes a vaccine or who's a parent of someone who does must be informed by the person giving him that vaccine of the risks and benefits of that vaccine. Well, right now, as nearly as we can tell, that's not happening pretty much anywhere in the country. When the kids go to school and they are forced to take the vaccine to get into school, they are not told, and their families are not told. For example, there's not a single place where anyone who is getting a vaccine has ever been told that $4 billion has been paid to children's families who have died or been maimed. The CDC has information sheets on 40 different vaccines, roughly, and those sheets tell you the establishment view of what's wrong with the vaccines. When I say wrong with them, I mean what the side effects are. I suggest everyone that wants to be interested in vaccines go look at those things and be advised that what they say are the side effects are those things which have to be said because they cannot possibly be denied. And they're there. There's some very important ones. However, there are other things about which there is serious controversy, which they don't tell you. They don't even say there is serious controversy that this vaccine may or may not put prolonged lifetime protection into your body. There's nothing in there that says, I mean, after the polio vaccines, which were systematically quite effective, all adults who had been vaccinated end up many years later getting polio as a part of the deal with having gotten the polio vaccine. Now, that's maybe not a reason not to take the shot, but it's something people should know. They should understand that this is not a totally risk-free situation and that someone has calculated the benefits and the risks, that the benefits and the risk have been calculated with high economic benefits being put on the side of saying why you should take the shot, whatever it is, and the information, for example, the fact that $4 billion has been spent on people who, pay to compensate children's families where the children and adults have done it too, have died or been maimed, that information is not given to people who are being told they have to take a shot. And we're saying that information combined with the opportunity to say, gee, I'm going to bypass this, it should be there, with the potential exception, which the society could decide, that in situations where there is an extremist situation where the vaccine is thought to be able to help, that it might be able to be mandated. But other than that particular exception, we need to put it to the standard of, if you're going to put somebody's life on the line, you have to have a good, strong reason for it, and you have to give them a chance to opt out if they want to. And just to raise that question now, you're considered a quack or some kind of crazy person or a nut or you should be muzzled. I mean, this is just a very bad situation.
Right, exactly. Well, on the flu vaccine, is that something like, do you take a flu vaccine? What do you think of it with all you know?
Well, let me say a couple of things about that. First of all, what I do or don't do, I don't think is relevant to the overall issue. When I say it, I'm not saying what I do, you should do because I do it. I'm not saying, and I work very hard with my friends to be very careful about that. But in fact, I would never take the flu vaccine. I got introduced into this issue when former Secretary of Health and Human Services John Gardner called me in 1970. I was working with Nader, and he said, will you guys be interested in looking at some problems I felt that we had at HHS? It was HEW when he did it at the time. I think something was, I mean, I've been told, and I'm looking at evidence, that something was going wrong in vaccine regulation, and I'd like you to take a look at it. And he gave me the name of a scientist, and I worked with that scientist, who happened to be the chief flu scientist at what was the CDC, which was the Division of Biologic Standards at that point. And I looked at it with him. He was an absolute advocate of vaccination in the right circumstances, and he said you had to be crazy to take the flu vaccine. Not only that, he introduced me to all kinds of people in the establishment, which he'd worked his whole life with, including Dr. Alexander Langmuir, who was the founder of CDC, who said he had been fired from CDC for not willing to make the annual statement that the flu vaccine should be taken because he didn't think it worked. And they had theoretical reasons why it didn't work. Theoretically, I mean, the framework that they were working out of was that the flu is an airborne disease and the vaccine is a blood-given vaccine, and the blood-given vaccine created one kind of circulating antibodies, and the flu itself, inhaled, carried on the air, created a different kind of circulating antibody, and it was only serendipitous that any of it ever worked at all. There was an early on inhaled flu vaccine, which worked better than the injected vaccine, but they couldn't keep it. They couldn't keep it on the shelf long enough to get it from the manufacturers to the ultimate consumer. So they had a manufacturing reason why the vaccine that they could defend scientifically couldn't make it to the market. So they used the one that didn't work so well and put that on the market. And these are two of the top guys in flu research in the country saying this. So from that day on, I said, you know, that I hadn't taken a flu vaccine up until then. And from that day on, I said, I don't see any data that says why I should take it. And then as these flu things have happened, we got involved in the swine flu event back in 1976 and laid out all this information. And the government first really pushed to get 200 people vaccinated with the swine flu vaccine in 1976, and then ultimately withdrew it from the market because it was causing too many deaths. And they stopped at 49 million. So I figured we, 151 million had been avoided had that problem. The thing is, if you said flu, you just asked about flu. The flu thing is a very, very complicated situation because you find many strains of flu will start in Asia or the Middle East or even sometimes from Europe. They'll start with flu coming from overseas to here. And what they want to do is figure out what strain they should make the vaccine to protect against. If they guess wrong, then it's 100% ineffective. If they guess right, then you get some possible effectiveness by their standards. And then if you put into there the idea that 4 days off of work, which is roughly what the flu costs for the most part, and that's what you're trying to prevent, you say, well, wait a minute, why is it so important to do that? And then you discover that the Army had data for years of the fact that a number of people, a significant, statistically significant set of folks, got what's called Guillain-Barré, and that's called French polio, and it's a paralytic disease that starts at the bottom, starts at your feet, and works up your legs until if it gets too young, you die. Lungs, you die, and then quite often it reverses and goes away. So it's not considered to be universally fatal, although it kills a number of people. But that was happening with the swine flu vaccine in 1976. That's why they took it off the market. So you say to yourself, you've got something here which may not work very well because it's injected rather than circulating. That's A. B, it may not work very well because it's hard to match the strain that you're protecting against with the strain that's causing it. So it doesn't work too well. There's two ways that it's problematic on the efficacy side. Thirdly, the data comes in and you find out that the vaccine is considered to be only marginally effective year after year. And then you discover that there's a record of serious side effects. And then you discover that what you're trying to solve is four and a half to 5 days off from work. And you say to yourself, this is bad social policy. This is bad social policy. Now, one of the worst ways it's bad policy is the public begins to learn these things, and then whatever value there is under all vaccines is undermined. there are vaccines that people really swear by and people use, and they certainly have the right to choose, and there's lots of data for them and so forth. You know, there are other people that say those are false as well. That's an issue that the individual needs to determine, needs to work with. The idea of muzzling this discussion is crazy. This, what they're doing on vaccines is analogous to what was attempted on the Boeing airplanes. The idea was to sweep the whole issue under the rug and not talk about it. And finally, the U.S. was goaded by the rest of the world into getting on the bandwagon of discussing it. And now we discover all kinds of things. You know, Boeing is doing reviewing their own safety studies. Well, and, you know, the FDA, the drug industry pays the FDA to review studies. That's an endemic problem in the whole system. Then we discover that there were safety things that were available for the planes, but they were optional. You could buy them or not buy them. Well, in the situation we have right now, if you want to know about vaccines and you ask your doctor, he'll probably give you that sheet. If you don't ask, you won't get it in most cases. And certainly when the school nurse is doing it, and then when you go to the drugstore and the drugstore does it, you don't, no one ever tells you that $4 billion was paid to solve the problems, to cover people that died. They don't tell you that. So the data is swept under the rug. Then when it came down to the issue of, on the planes, they didn't train the pilots. Well, you've got a lot of people out there who are giving vaccines who don't know anything about what we're talking about. And they don't match the vaccine to the individual at all. I mean, there are individuals. We had a problem with measles vaccine because measles vaccine was causing a very rare but 100% fatal disease. It was called subacute sclerosing panencephalitis. It was a very small number of those, but it was 100% fatal, and it came from the measles vaccine. And what was discovered was that if you had circulating measles antibody and you got this vaccine, you could die. And kids were dying. And the issue came up, let's just check everybody to see if they got circulating measles virus, because, you know, antibodies, because then we could save all this small number of kids that die. And the answer was, it's too expensive. Mm-hmm. It's too expensive to check every single kid. But if you go to a doctor, it's not expensive for a doctor to do it. I mean, it might cost a little money for the doctor, but you don't have to pay for it. But as a public health policy where every school kid would have to be checked, it's costly. So they said, we just have to, you know, there's just going to be a small amount of the problem that's going to come from that.
Yeah.
The scientists all have, you know, the establishment scientists all have arguments to just make this all go away. My argument is, let's let the public look at the arguments on both sides, and then they can decide.
Right, I agree with you. Let's hear it for free speech. I thought that was in our Constitution. We just have a minute or two left. Could you tell our listeners, how can we get reliable information about vaccines that's not tainted by the corporations that are pushing them for profits? And tell us just a little bit about your organization, the Citizens for Health.
Well, first of all, the National Vaccine Information Center, which is run by parents that have had problems with vaccines and are concerned about vaccines, has massive amounts of information that are very, very useful.
It's called the National Vaccine?
National Vaccine Information Center. You can just Google them.
Okay.
It depends on how much somebody wants to get into it, but I think go read the information that's there about the vaccine information, about the vaccine compensation program. Read the Childhood Vaccination Act of 1987. There's all kinds of information about that. And then there's lots of debate around on the internet, you know, scrolled away here and there, and Google that and look at that, and read both sides with, I read them agnostically. I read every scientific paper I read, I approach as an agnostic. This is a piece of information. I file it away. There's another piece of information. There's counter information. You just build information. And then, really, the CDC does have all of its 40 or so vaccine information documents online. You can go look at them and read about any vaccine. One of the reasons, by the way, this is such an interesting issue from a public debate point of view is that only a small portion of the society has children who are facing mandatory vaccination at any given time. So it's all the children going into, I think it's kindergarten or first grade in California, and all the children going into seventh grade in California. But anybody who doesn't have children in school, homeschoolers, for example, are so far not required to have these vaccines. And by the way, the law is not that you must have vaccinations. That's not the law. We're pretty sure that would be unconstitutional. The law they do have says you can't go to school if you don't get a vaccination. So the question is, the courts are all saying, well, you know, that's not about vaccination, that's about school. You don't really have a right to go to school necessarily. So it's your choice. You can choose to either go to school or get vaccinated. You can either not go to school or get vaccinated. And so it's not exactly a direct mandatory, you got to take vaccines. It's a mandatory, you can't go to school if you don't take vaccines. So all of this squiggling around and maneuvering and cutting corners, that's all going on. You can read about all of that online. You can go to the CDC, look at all the vaccine information, documents.
CDC is the Center for Disease Control.
Center for Disease Control. Citizens for Health is on all kinds of issues like this. We do not have a specific vaccine information area. We just refer everybody to the National Vaccine Information Center. They've worked for years, and the founder of that is the co-author of the book Shot in the Dark that I mentioned earlier, and she's been just tirelessly working for years on getting information out.
Wonderful. That's all the time we have. Jim Turner, thanks so much for being on the show and for all your great work.
Well, thank you very much for having me on and for all the work you're doing. People are talking.